Okay, I'll pray to open up here. Lord, thank you for being here with us and in the midst of craziness and life and tension and conflict and problems, challenges, that you're there with us. And life's not perfect, and we know that, and that's what gives us hope and grace that we know that we receive from you, and we accept it. And we just pray for everyone that's here this morning that you would pour more grace into their life for whatever the situation is. And let us see how complicated the Bible is this morning, and how it's just like our lives. It's not a simple story, but it's a very real and true story. And speak to us, Holy Spirit. Amen. Let me pray. Amen.
When I was a kid, Florida, one of the things I said, the Bible, you should be thinking of the Bible, thanks so much, the Bible like a soap opera.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So if you've been following the parasha, the regular parasha that's in the synagogue currently, they've been going through the book of Genesis, and that's definitely, the book of Genesis is so much like a soap opera. It's all about relationships, especially family relationships, and a lot of the problems. You know, you start off with murder, you know, the two brothers, one brother kills the other brother. That's as bad as it can go, right?
That's the thing of the
start. Yeah. And you start off with creation. Creation is good. That's what God does. But the book of Genesis ends with Joseph in a coffin. That's the last verse of Genesis. So you go from life to death. Genesis kind of encompasses the whole human experience. And so this morning, as we're going into Christmas and we're in the first Shabbat of Advent, we also see a similar story from Genesis, and Genesis is going to crop up here this morning as we look at these first 17 verses of Matthew. So let's read Matthew chapter 1. What we usually do is we'll start to the right here, and we'll go around the table and just read a few verses. And if you don't want to read, you don't have to, but then we'll just read this. Sure, yeah. We can keep it in English. Okay, Shema.
The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac begot Yaakov. Yaakov begot Judah and his brothers. Judah begot Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab, and Amminadab begot Nachshon, and Nachshon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab, Boaz begot Obed by Ruth, Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David the king. What would you go on? Could somebody else go on?
Pure.
Sheila.
David was the father of Solomon by the wife of Uriah. Solomon, the father of Rehoboam, the father of Abijah. Abijah, the father of Asa. Asa, the father of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat, the father of Joram. Joram, the father of Uzziah. Uzziah, the father of Jotham. Jotham, the father of Ahaz. Ahaz, the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah, the father of Manasseh. Manasseh, the father of Amon. Amon, the father of Josiah. Josiah, the father of Jecona and his brothers at the time of the deportation to Babylon.
After the deportation to Babylon, Jecona became the father of Shealtiel, the father of Zerubbabel, Zerubbabel, the father of Abiud, the father of Eliakim. The king, the father of Zor, the father of Zerok, the father of Achim, Achim, the father of Eliud, Eliud, the father of Elzar, Elzar, the father of Matan. I don't know about the names in English, so pardon me. Matan, the father of Jacob, and Jacob, the father of Joseph. That's
generations from Abraham to David were 14 generations, and from David to the deportation to Babylon 14 generations, and from the deportation to Babylon to the Christ 14 generations.
Thank you. Okay, so we read some really exciting stuff that sometimes people skip over. Genealogy. It's interesting now with technology, especially with the discovery of DNA in the last century. Everybody now, you can basically find your ancestry, and there's lots of tests that you can take. And so Sharon and I just got it, so we're going to do it. But people always want to know, where do you come from? Who are my parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, the people you've never met before? And as you know, this is a big part of the Bible. What's this remind us of here in Matthew 1? What's it echo from the Bible?
All the reports of Jacob and the children. And stuff in Numbers.
Right. It's a bunch of names. But before Numbers, you think of Genesis, right? Like, you start with... you start in the very first, from the very beginning, chapter 4.
They have their three, and then their three have, I don't know how many more.
Right. Well, it starts, because Abel's dead, it starts with Shem, sorry, not Shem, Shet, Seth in English, the third son of Adam and Eve, and it starts going through he begat so-and-so, and he begat so-and-so, And so if you were to, this title, this very first phrase that you have in chapter 1, verse 1 is, what does it say in your translations?
This is the record of the genealogy of Jesus.
Okay, this is the record of the genealogy. What other?
I got the book of the genealogy.
This is the book of the genealogy. In the Greek, it's Biblos, you know, like Bible comes, it's book. But this is the record, genealogy. Any other translation there?
This is the origin of.
I think King James would have, these are the generations. And it's like genealogy, you know, comes from the Greek word where we get the word Genesis from. And so I bring all this up because if you go to Genesis, like... Go to, say, Genesis 2:4. Genesis 2:4.
What does it say there?
This is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created.
So, this is the account. These are the same words that are used here in Matthew 1. In the Hebrew, it's Ele Todot.
I've got the history. In English, I've got the history.
So you have history, you have account. So it starts in Genesis with the creation. This is the account of that. If you go to Genesis 6:9.
Yeah, this is the account of Noah.
Yeah. Which is the same words that are used in Matthew 1, talking about this is the account of Jesus or the genealogy of Jesus. This is the record, the genealogy of Noah. And we all know that his three sons. Genesis 10:1.
This is the account of Shem, Ham, and Japheth.
So, his three sons.
Noah's sons. Yeah.
And go to 11:27.
This is the account of Terah.
Who's Terah?
He became the father of Abraham.
Yeah, the father
Abraham,
of
Nahor and Abraham.
Yeah, Abraham. Genesis 25:12.
This is the account of Abraham's son Ishmael.
And then go to 25:19.
Wow.
This is the account of Abraham's son Isaac. And on we go.
And on we go. I'll just throw a few more out there. Genesis, is it 26? 1? Or no, 36. 36.
Esau.
Because we all know that Esau has a lot of kids, right, that come out of him. He gets a big, like a blessing. Then 37:2.
This is the account of Jacob.
Okay, so Jacob goes into his kids.
Yeah.
And there's a couple other in the Bible, but they're predominantly here in Genesis.
Wow.
So that's why I want to point out here. This thing of Ele Toldot.
We should name the book Toldot.
What?
We should have named the book Toldot.
Yeah, Toldot. And so this, I guess the main thing to think about is the writer of Matthew. First off.
So Ele Toldot means account or
generation.
Toldot. It comes from the same root, you know, to give birth or to be born, all that. Yud lamed dalet.
So I guess what I want to point out here is that Matthew is Jewish. I mean, it's obvious, right? But just to kind of remind us that either he's Jewish or his source is Jewish, but it's very much following the Genesis tradition. That we're following somebody or something, and we're giving an account of how he came to be and where he comes from. It's important in ancient tradition. Today, it's, you know, unless you are a king or a queen, you know, from Europe or Asia or Africa, it's your lineage isn't, people don't necessarily think like that anymore. It's kind of like, well, what have you done now? What, you know, forget what your great grandparents did, but. But in the ancient world, it's very important where you come from.
Most people in the West can't name all their
great grandparents.
They don't know their names.
But it's interesting that when we meet new people, one of our first questions was, where are you from?
Right.
Today, even this morning.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
In the country, they want to know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't say.
Who's you?
What we do say is, where are you from? What do you do? This is Vincent here. I know where he's from and what he does. I do not know what his grandparents did.
No.
I know his father died, but I'm not sure that I know any more. I mean, we're very slow on.
Yeah, but we may have done if we get, as you get to know them more. But
yeah.
What I meant is our initial question is.
Is what we met today.
Yeah, but that's because of
the
bias.
Yeah, I know, but you do anywhere when you meet somebody new.
Do you think that's because in the older world, who you were was determined by your family, and now that children have more options and roads they can roam?
Yeah,
definitely.
That's a good point.
So you get last names like Baker. You know, everyone in your family was a baker.
Yeah.
And if you weren't good at baking, that's too bad, you know?
But in Jewish tradition, it's still your family, who your family are, where you come from. What they did, but
sure, and in many traditions,
that's a long way.
But it's still, I think, for us, obviously, we're very global citizens, so where you come from has a lot of meaning. I can tell you who my parents were, that doesn't mean anything, but I come from a very small town where some people have lived in the area for thousands of years, and then it is, they're indigenous people, and so then it is again all about, well, who's your parents? What clan are you? What house are you? Who's your family? So it's just we've lost that connection because of how big our world is.
That's true.
I asked the country with a very new residence program, and he asked me, are you Jewish?
Mm-hmm.
Got confused, and I'm not.
Right.
So they always want to know what are you and where are you from.
Especially at borders.
Here in the border.
Yeah. So
it's a great evangelistic tool when I'm living in Abu Ghosh, and they ask me where am I from, and why am I here? And I tell them about the history, about the God ordered the Jews home. That I came here for a visit, you know, and I'm a believer in Yeshua, not Jesus Christ. And so understand the Hebrew name, Yeshua HaMashiach, and I tell them about that the audible voice of God three times said for me to get home. So this is why the Jews have come home. We did not like come home and take over your territory. We kept pushing out. That was never, you know, that was never an issue. We would not do that. So they really got a good gospel message every time they ask me where I'm from, why I'm here.
So coming back to the genealogies here, there's how many columns or sections? Three. Okay.
Three, yeah, 14.
And they're 14, right? 14, 14, 14. And who starts the first, or
that's the number 14, especially me.
Is it special? Well, we'll talk about it. But I first want to just clarify what who the 14 are.
Abraham.
So we have Abraham starting here, and he goes all the way till... David, okay. And then... And then from David, what do we have? To what?
To
okay, David, to Babylon,
yeah.
The exile, and then from the exile to Jesus, right?
Yeah. And the exile is Jeconiah.
The exile is what?
Jeconiah.
Oh, right. The last king there. Technically, Zechariah was the last king, but yeah, the writer here. We'll talk about that. So, right, the last. I'll just write him in here. Zechariah, and we can bring in Shalatiel because. Okay, so. And how does what's the very first verse say of Matthew?
This is the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham.
So is this important, that first verse?
Sure.
Okay, so what are the important things here in that verse?
Tells you what it's about to tell you.
Right, but what are those important?
Well, Jesus descended both from the father of the people and from the king.
Okay, so he's descended from Abraham, he's the son of Abraham, and he's the son of David, right?
Yeah.
Those are the important things in that first verse. Then let's come to
our...
Right. Yes, but we got to remember, what does the Mashiach mean?
Anointed one.
It's anointed, and what does that mean?
King.
It means king, and so what does that mean? David.
He's a king.
You can also anoint priests.
No, I know. And you can anoint a prophet as well. But generally, it's a term that's connected to mainly kings and priests. Those are like the main two. But what I'm trying to say is when you say Jesus Christ, Yeshua HaMashiach, you're saying Jesus the Anointed One. And when you're saying Jesus the Anointed One, Matthew is saying he is the son of David. That's what he's trying to say. It's not like some title that got made up out of the air. It means that he is descended from this royal lineage. Okay, so David and Abraham. Now, come to our last verse that we read, verse 17. And what does it say there to finish up?
To finish up?
Yeah, summarize that verse 17.
There's 14 generations from the beginning to up to in between each to Jesus.
And what are the big names that are mentioned?
Abraham and
Jesus.
And Jesus and Babylon and Jesus, is it? There are 14 generations from Abraham to David. Oh yeah. Abraham, David, and Christ.
Right. Those are the three people that are mentioned. So just like in verse 1, we've come full circle with what this whole genealogy is about from the writer of Matthew. What are his emphases?
in verse 1, and you're one.
Yeah. Abraham and David, Jesus the Messiah, yeah. Jesus the Anointed One. Okay, so
now let's talk about the number 14.
I think I lost you. What was that last point?
Just that in verse 1 and in verse 17,
it's the same.
They mention Abraham and David and Jesus the Messiah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what was my question? Oh, yes, 14. Number 14. Correct, the question. What are some ideas?
It's a double seven times.
Double seven.
Double seven, so it's six times seven, 13.
Seven, seven, seven.
And six times is 40. A full week.
40.
Yeah.
Okay. So you could think like Daniel or something. This adds up to 42 generations.
Yeah.
What I've read
it's
is
fullness, totally.
Right. It's kind of coming to fullness, but really, it'd be right if it was seven sevens, right? That's what you need, right? Yeah. It doesn't quite do it. So, it kind of leaves you hanging. You're a little, it's lacking there. If you want to go apocalyptic on it, what I've read is this. Do you know gematria? It's when you take Hebrew numbers. Aleph is 1, Bet is 2, Gimel is 3, Dalet is 4, and so on. If you take the number 4, if you take the name David, Dalet, Vav, Dalet. Dalet is 4. Sorry.
Six.
I just messed it up. Yeah, 6. Oh, I got it, yeah. The Vav is 6, and the other Dalet for David is 4, and it adds up to 14. This is one, you know, interpretation of maybe the 14 for David's name is buried in the structure of the numbers. No one actually really knows. Everybody knows, yes, sevens are important because seven is the number of completion of creation
and holiness.
And so obviously there's something there. But there's also possibly something with David's name. If you do it in First Temple spelling, if you do Second Temple, they add a U here. And then
it up.
What?
And that would make you 24.
Oh, yeah, 24. Then it becomes 24. So, but anyways, that's kind of interesting. But again, I guess what I would emphasize is we come back to this again.
What's 42 in Gematria?
I mean, you would have to run different words.
You can like play around with
it. I know, endlessly.
Endlessly.
Yeah.
Membet or something.
Membet would be, 42.
Don't try to play the lottery with those numbers. You won't win.
That's very good for like Gemma, 4 plus 6 plus 4, you could do other combinations to get 14 also, right?
I remember...
Who that is.
I remember the... I'll tell you a little funny gematria story. My first year here, some guy who was staying with us was doing gematria. He had some thing, and so he did my name, and he's like, "Wow, your name adds up to like poop," you know? and I was like, "What?" You know, like, you know, it can't, right? So then I like had to add an Aleph to my name or something, so it was like one off or something.
What, Yeti?
Yeah, that's where the Aleph came from. Anyways, it's like, but then it was just like, this is stupid. So anyways, that gematria is kind of like, it's kind of fun to play around, but I wouldn't be like, this is, was the
whole thing. It can be quite dangerous, actually.
Yeah, it's more of an artistic thing. So, but what is interesting is about David. So, you like that, Dan? You like that story? Maybe we could all add up to poop in our names.
What's the name? Add up to something else.
Yeah.
Good. You know, it depends what you're trying to make it into.
Exactly. So, here's another thing I want to emphasize is that if you were to go back to the Bible and you were to follow Abraham through all of these generations, you go in Chronicles and all of this. You will realize that there are three generations missing between David the exile. Yeah. They are, let me just.
That's totally legal, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, they are the, where are their names?
And Solomon is different
or something? Well, no, names are different and all that.
Solomon, it's also the 10 generations of Ruth, then Ruth.
Okay, so three kings of Judah are missing. I mean, you know, they're very famous kings. Ahaziah, Jehoash, you might remember these guys, and Amaziah.
Oh, Amaziah, they're missing.
What they all kind of have in common is they're kind of bad kings.
Okay.
So, what does this tell us about this structure here?
It's contrived.
Well, and what does that mean?
They wanted it to come out that way. They wanted to come out to 14. Right.
Yes, there's a plan for 14. That is important. Sometimes people are like, when we read things, like this is a literal breakdown of family generations and this, but that's not true. Sometimes there is a how you want to present the story, and you're trying to present the 14s. That, I think that's important.
Well, you should say genealogies in general.
Right.
In the Bible, they don't have to represent every single generation.
Yes.
They're telling you for a reason, and if they skip a generation, they have an overall plan that they're trying to do.
Yes.
So,
well,
right.
Maybe the overall plan is that they were lousy kings. They were evil kings.
Maybe,
either.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah. But the point is that you don't have to list every single generation for it to be. You can jump to the grandson if you need to for
right.
your purposes.
Right.
Yeah.
What the word said that David has to have a king or someone in charge
on his throne.
On his throne for eternity.
Right.
And when I asked the Lord when I first got here about Rabino, how he died, and Perez took his place by default, I said, Lord, why Perez? Why Perez? And then he became a president, not the prime minister. Why Perez? He said, Sheva, would you go back and look to see what I said? I said, every generation, it has to be a lineage of David on the throne of Israel.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Even if he's bad, like he has. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. So this is important again. I think we're coming back to just think in the big picture, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. We're painting little things to build up to a final understanding of this. Yes.
In Missing the Kings, could there be an argument that this is a corrupt argument from the Jewish point of view? And,
argument. Like, what do you...
It's a corrupt argument because you skipped the game.
Sure.
So this is just a bogus.
Sure, I know. People can argue bogus things all the time, right? Because, I mean, our world today, this is...
No, but that's why it's important to compare to other genealogies, that this
right.
is a practice for genealogies.
Sure.
Yeah.
Even when you compare a genealogy to each other, you can leave out a generation. This is accepted in Second Temple Judaism.
Right.
So it's not considered corrupt.
Right. Well, I think what
right.
he's trying to get at, though, is people who want to argue about, let's just say, Jesus is the Messiah, or, you know, the apologetics, could point something out like that and bring the argument. And what she's trying to say is, in the context of a culture, this is acceptable.
Yeah.
It's part of the culture.
It was a legitimate way of building a genealogy.
Yeah. Because, again, this isn't, you're not going to court to
prove inheritance of land.
To prove these types of things. It's the bigger picture of who Jesus becomes and who he is.
And it doesn't change the fact that he's the son of David and he's the son of Abraham. It only changes the numbers.
Right, right, exactly. So what I also want to point out in this genealogy, besides this, because I kind of like dumped that out there, is what else has been added into the genealogy that would normally not be in the genealogy?
The women.
The women. How many women?
Four.
Who are they?
Ruth.
Mary.
Mary. wife of Uriah.
The wife, you see the Uriah part? What's it say about Uriah?
She's another Benjamite.
Yes. So her name's not even mentioned. It just says the wife of Uriah.
Does she have
that's
a name?
Yeah, Bathsheba.
Of course.
There's a reason, I think.
Okay.
There's only one story in the Bible where she's called the wife of Uriah consistently.
So let's just quickly review their lives. We don't have time to do them justice, but Tamar is famous because
she was raped by her.
Nope. No, that's Dina. Dina was raped. Tamar.
She's
the wife. She's the wife of Onan. And Onan is the son of Judah. Right? And Onan will not have a child with her. So God kills him. Then she goes to the next brother. Is it Er? Something like that. And he also will not have a child with her. So God kills him. Now Judah has one son left.
Shua.
And he will not marry her because he doesn't want to die. So
he's too young.
But the father doesn't
want to
give him.
Him
to him
because
he's too young.
Does it say too young though?
He's too young.
Okay.
He's going to have to grow up.
She doesn't want to wait for it.
Well,
I don't think so.
The question is whether that's an excuse or not.
Yeah, I don't think so. Basically, she's cursed. Right?
All of her husbands died.
She's like a black widow. And so, what's her plan? She goes and she sleeps with her father-in-law in order to continue the line so that she can have a child. Because otherwise, she's going to be in a bad situation. And then Judah, she does it by trickery as a prostitute. And then Judah's going to burn her or kill her. And then she pulls out his driver's license and says, "Look, this is the guy who slept with me," which is like his rod and his signet. And so she ends up living, and she has a child, and the
man
child...
Man has very important words, he says.
Go ahead.
She did the right thing.
Says she is more righteous than I.
Okay, she's more righteous than I. Okay? So, this is very interesting. Talking about what you just said, Jim, about Genesis, you know, like it's a soap opera, the Bible. I mean, that is a soap opera.
There is.
So, then... And so, okay, so basically she becomes the wife of Judah. You know, not in a real sense, but they have a child together. It's very strange, right?
Yeah.
But that's the truth. Judah. She's connected to Judah. Rahab is Rahab.
And she was a Canaanite.
Okay, so Canaanite. Good.
Or was she Hittite? She was something other than...
Yeah, you're right. Rahab is...
Jericho.
And what's her...
Prostitute.
And what does she do?
She
helps the spies and protects them.
She has incredible faith.
And who is saved because of that?
Her family.
Yeah.
Okay, notice the connection here. Tamar saves her family by sleeping with her father-in-law because she didn't have any family otherwise. But lineage, right? Rahab does the same thing with her. She saves her family by what she does. Rahab, according to what Matthew says, who's her husband?
But whose mother is Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab.
So her husband is
Boaz.
No, not Boaz.
No, Salmon.
Salmon?
Salmon. Well, it says Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Yes,
Salmon.
Shon
begat Salmon. Salmon. Becomes
right, so she marries.
And many think that Salmon is one of the spies that went in.
Okay, so Rahab, again, she's not Israelite, she's a Gentile. She saves her family,
yeah.
And she ends up actually, I guess, she leaves her life in prostitution and she settles down. And she has a son, and his name is
Boaz.
And we all know who Boaz is. She was rehabilitated. She was rehabilitated, praise the Lord. Her son is Boaz. And we all know Boaz ends up marrying Ruth. And we all know who Ruth is, right? Who is she? She's from Moab. She's a Moabitess. Again, non-Israeli. And in the way, you know, the way she ends up going out into the field at night is not, in the culture, is dangerous. It's not something that you do.
If you're a good person.
If you're trying trained, you know, you have this whole reputation thing. So you could always, there's this suspect of what Ruth is doing. But Ruth, again, why did Ruth do this? Why was she so desperate?
Because her mother-in-law told her to.
Because her mother-in-law's sons were dead.
Yeah, she wanted
there the was no lineage. There was no family.
We're back at the same family.
We're back at the same concept.
Her motives were pure.
Her motives were pure, right? She didn't like do anything wrong, but she was like,
she's
like
being
remorse. Of course.
She
was pushing the boundary in order
of propriety, sexual propriety.
Yeah, in the culture, it would be dangerous.
Yeah.
What she
went But it also, that story proves that even in that context, she comes out righteous, and so does Boaz. Here's a man, he's eaten and drunk, and he's been happy, he's sleeping, and she gets in bed next to him, and he still says, let's do this the right way.
Right, Boaz.
I'll check things out tomorrow, and we'll...
So everything's kosher at the end of the day. I'm not arguing that, but... But just
the
so you know,
the theme is there.
It could appear suspect. Yeah.
But the message is not just saving the family, but it comes out righteous. I mean, that's the message at the end, isn't it?
Yeah. They are righteous, even though they look suspect, they're all righteous.
Okay, finally, number four.
But wait, before you go to that passage,
we don't have a lot of time.
One thing, at the end when Boaz and Ruth get married, it has a special way, it says, and God gave her pregnancy.
Yes.
It sounds special. Instead of just saying she got pregnant.
Yes.
And so that might be also a hint. All these literary hints can build up to a back shadowing of Jesus because God gave Mary pregnancy.
Yeah, well.
In an even more special way than Ruth, because we know blood.
Let's bring that at the end.
Yeah, okay.
That, I mean, with that. So,
yeah.
Bathsheba, who is she? The wife of Uriah?
Yeah.
She Israelite?
No.
She's not.
Her husband's Hittite.
Yeah, her husband's a Hittite, and it's basically, I think it's written that she's not, but we all know the story. David basically murders her husband after he sleeps and impregnates her to hide his sin. And what happens to that child that she's pregnant with?
He
dies. But then we know the next child she has is
Solomon.
And what happens when David comes to the end of his life and he's in bed and dying? There's kind of a fight going on among his sons, right?
Right.
Is it as a power struggle? Adoniah
is the oldest.
Adonijah, I think you could say in English. He wants to be king. He's the oldest. He should be because he's the oldest, right? That's how it works. But then there's Solomon.
Not with David.
But then there's Solomon. And so who goes in and tells David that you need to get Solomon put up there before
Bathsheba.
So you see a similarity in these four stories here? Again, this woman is trying to protect the lineage of what, you know, however they feel to continue their line.
They're kingmakers.
In their own ways. And so what else? They all pass on the lineage.
The women of faith.
Okay, the women of faith.
Initiative.
Women of initiative. What's a big one now? They're not Jewish.
They're Gentiles. And they look suspect from a distance.
But they're Gentiles that marry in with the Jews, with the Israelites.
Which is fascinating because Matthew was writing for a Jewish audience. So he's highlighting that these women, these Gentile women, are part of this genealogy.
Yeah. And there's one last thing that's really cool that connects all four of these. Can you figure out what it is?
Enemies of Israel? No.
Well, I mean,
there
would all be... Okay, so Bathsheba is the wife of David.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth is his grandmother. Rahab is his great grandmother. And then Tamar and Judah, he's the lion of the tribe of Judah, right? That's the whole thing of David. You walk around Jerusalem today and you see these lions everywhere. And it's Judah. Mm-hmm. His tribal lineage is Judah. It's a significant point. So, again, I feel like we keep coming back to that verse 1 of Matthew chapter 1, that the focus of the writer of Matthew is on David.
And they're all women, but they don't just happen to be women. They accomplish missions that can only be accomplished by women.
Yeah.
So it's not...
Yeah.
And the other thing is Matthew didn't have to record any of them. He could have skipped over all of them, but he on purpose put them in to hint, like, don't remember these women and their life story as you see Mary and her situation now. Don't judge it and don't be suspect from what looks from a distance as impropriety.
Yeah.
It's actually of God and she is righteous.
Yeah. Just you were going to say something?
When you read the Hebrew verse about Maria, about the prophecy, then the Hebrew can be read as virgin, but also as prostitute, as an infertile woman, which were working in the pagan temples.
Where?
The promise of the virgin will become...
Oh, you mean just call it a virgin?
Yeah, and the Hebrew word can be read as prostitute.
No, not prostitute. Young woman.
It can
woman.
Be read as
young woman.
Not necessarily a virgin.
Yeah.
A young woman. And it could be read as either married or unmarried.
Yeah.
The emphasis is young woman.
Yeah.
Okay, when they were infertile, that was the explanation I heard. When they were infertile,
you're talking to the Greek.
They would be used as prostitutes in the temples in those times.
What is true is that virgin and young woman come in parallel. And if you look at some of the Canaanite myths, you find one of the goddesses named Anat. And after she slept with another god for six nights and 7 days, they call her a virgin Anat. So it's quite clear that they don't mean virgin literally.
Mm-hmm.
Virgin is a word you call a young woman.
Yeah, okay.
Now, culturally, in society, any young woman who's not married is by default virgin.
The reason why I pointed this, that in that meaning, she gets in line
with the other four
women. There's the same
suspicion. Suspicion. Right. So exactly, this is the point here. And then, after we finish this genealogy, we come to Mary. Right? She's the fifth woman that's a part of this lineage. And so... it's easy to see. Now,
she's Jewish, so that's a difference there. Mm-hmm. But in general, we see that idea that the writer here is trying to emphasize that, yes, you might have heard that Mary, you know, got pregnant before she was married and you know, all of this stuff, but he's saying, no, she actually, the story of her being... impregnated by the Holy Spirit, or whatever you want to call it, would very much fit in this tradition of righteous women who were obeying God or, you know, being servants of the Lord. So, yes, that's a good point there. And I also want to emphasize the women thing, that you would never mention, if you go back and you look in Genesis, you never see in these genealogies women mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's always men. And that's part of the whole, what do you call it? Not mass. Patriarchal societies where women, for instance, it says Jacob has 12 sons. But how many daughters does he have?
Two.
Well, it says one. It says one.
More.
It says Dina, right. And why is she mentioned?
Because it's a story about her.
Because she's raped. It's a significant story. So you got to mention her. But probably Jacob had more than one daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's just things that just aren't mentioned all the times when you're trying to focus on stories. So my point is this, is when we come to Matthew and you come to the resurrection of Jesus, who is the witness, if you go to Matthew 28, who is the witness that Jesus has risen from the dead?
Mary Magdalene.
Mary. A woman.
Well, not just a woman, but one who's been delivered from prostitution, and I don't know what.
Well, that's
or,
that's
we
not
don't
sure.
know, but delivered from seven demons.
Seven
demons.
Yeah.
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 Seven unclean spirits.
Yes.
Mary had a late stage baby, and you know that Elizabeth from her husband, they're the genealogy of Levite. So Mary is a Levite. That's what they don't understand. The Levite is always from the genealogy of David. You know.
So
this is what the rabbis say, that Jesus is just a prophet, but he's not from the lineage of David. Well, that's wrong.
So going on with the idea
that Elizabeth prayed over Jesus also.
Right, she did, that's for sure. When you go to the resurrection and you have this woman as the witness, in Matthew 28, she is the only witness. Only Luke talks about Peter, or maybe John too, coming and seeing later, but it's a woman and women that see Jesus resurrected first. And if you were to write or make up any story in the ancient world and you were to use a woman as a witness, it was the best way that your story would not be believed. And so it shows you.
And it isn't actually. I mean, that
shows you it's genuine.
That's even mentioned, isn't it? That the women had said these things, but basically, I can't remember the expression, but doesn't it say, you know, the women came and told us, but.
We don't believe
it.
It does say that. Yeah. And so you see this thing here in Matthew, that Matthew basically has women that are a major part of the early church. And, well, just in general, you see it in the New Testament, that women are a major part of the early church. And that's pretty radical. That's pretty, back then, it's very radical, actually.
The other thing maybe you could point out between the four women and Mary is that these are all from the tribe of Judah, right? But they were genetically outside, and God brought them in.
Yes.
And Mary, she's the one that has Jesus. Joseph doesn't sleep with her. This whole genealogy is Joseph.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about genetics, Jesus is coming from Mary, not Joseph.
Yes.
However, God has brought him in to Joseph's Judah line. And it's kind of like the whole theme is God brings it together. What he brings in and is righteous in his eyes, don't question.
And so that kind of goes into the whole early church with Acts 15, when the Gentiles are coming to faith and they say, well, do they have to convert? Do they need to become Jews to follow Jesus? And the Jerusalem Council says, no, they don't have to convert. They just need to follow Jesus. They give these little rules to follow, but to have fellowship. But it's interesting that here you kind of have this hinting about the future of what the church is going to be, of Jew and Gentile coming together in the Messiah.
About following Joseph, there are two kinds of followers in the Old Testament.
Adoption.
So the taking care of the child, and that's the same thought as what you just explained about Gentiles coming in. Just by you're coming into the house, you live with the rest of the family, and you're part of the family.
Right.
So fathership is not only physical; it's also the fact that Joseph takes care of the child of Jesus.
Yeah. The adoption. I mean, Paul talks about it a lot in his letters about you've been adopted. Through the Spirit. So
it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful lesson for orphans too, for adopted children. That you know, you're part of this family 100%. You're not
exactly.
Any less.
Exactly. Biology doesn't determine it.
Yeah, it's
true. Yeah.
I just got a comment regarding Ruth. I mean, in Hebrew, it's described that she's an Eshet Chayel.
Mm.
And that is a military term.
Yeah.
And also, warrior. And then if you link that to Proverbs 31, it says, Eshet Chayel Mi'im Tzah. Who can find a virtuous woman?
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, maybe the Bible is describing this woman here who are, like you said, they are zealous in trying to protect their line, and you know, obviously God's behind it.
And the whole of Eshet Chayil in Proverbs 31 is about maintaining the family, not so much the line, but this is the woman who gets up early in the morning and feeds the family and clothes them with scarlet and takes care of them.
Taking initiative and doing the right thing. Like those two strands come together.
Right.
I think just waking up every morning with children is that's like that's it's a righteous act.
I've heard testimonies from particularly one I can think of a man coming out of a very, very orthodox home who comes to the Lord simply by reading the first chapter of Matthew, because he suddenly cottons on that Jesus is a Jew, Yeshua is a Jew, and he'd never heard that before.
Just to give one example as we close up here, of I started by saying the very first verse is talking that the focus is on David and Abraham. Abraham is the lineage of, you know, where the... He's also interesting, Abraham, because he's the father of many nations, not just of Israel. And so in a sense, he also kind of hints at this Gentile Israel coming together thing. Right, right. Father of many nations. Yeah, right. So that's also a significant part. But the David thing, the Messiah, the Christ, the Anointed, is a very important part of Matthew's gospel. If you read through the Gospel of Matthew this week, I'll just point out a couple of places, like Matthew 9:27. This is like in contrast to, say, Luke or Mark or John. As Jesus went on from there, two blind men followed him, calling out, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." Okay? So he's called Son of David. Matthew 12:23.
But isn't that also the right way to honor somebody when you need something from him? There are many sons of David walking around.
Sure, but in the Gospel of Matthew, he's specifically called Son of David. Whereas if you go to Luke and other places, he's not. So I'm trying to emphasize here for Matthew, just like we see in the very first verse, he's a son of David. Mm-hmm. Matthew 12:23, all the people were astonished and said, "Could this be the Son of David?"
See, when they're saying it like that, they're using it like a title of the Messiah. The Son of David for them is this king figure that's going to come and bring redemption.
Matthew 15:22, a Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me." And this is interesting, because it's a Canaanite woman. So you start thinking about Tamar, and then you have Son of David again. Matthew 19:28.
And is that also because he, being a messenger of good news because he healed people, is like a Messiah?
Well, I mean, you could say that, but David didn't go around healing people. That would be more like Elijah and Elisha, the prophets.
There is some tradition in Judaism that Solomon healed people.
Yeah, but that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's tradition.
Right. Matthew 19:20.
But the point is, surely, is that this anointed one was coming. This king character was coming. This person who was going to do something...
From the line of David.
From the line of David, especially. And they're saying, "Are you the son of David? You
yes.
are the son of David. You must be the son of David." Because the evidence of what he's doing is there.
A strong expectation in general.
And that's the Jewish way of doing it. Later on, what does it come in Luke? Luke is not son of David. It's more...
Prophet. There's, things like that. Matthew 19:28, Jesus said to them, "Truly I tell you, at the renewal of all things, when the Son of Man..." Oh, wait a second. I missed this one. 21. Matthew 21. But that one has him sitting on the throne there. Matthew 21, verse 9. "The crowds that went ahead of him and those that followed shouted, 'Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest heaven.'" And
it quotes Zechariah 8 earlier.
Yes.
"The king is coming to you."
And just to give a little
warm up for next Shabbat's Bible study, when we look at the birth of Jesus in Matthew 1, that's going to come next in Matthew 2, who comes to visit Jesus? In Matthew. Who?
The Magi.
The wise men from the east. And how do they find him? By a star. And a star is a symbol of a king. We know that from the book of Numbers when Balaam sees us.
Balaam, who is a wise man of the east.
Yeah, and Balaam is a wise man of the east. So basically, his prophecy is echoed in Matthew 2 as these wise men from the east come and follow Balaam's star. 24, 23, yeah. Numbers.
We'll look at it next week.
Yeah, you'll look at it next week. And who is out to kill Jesus, baby Jesus?
Herod.
And Herod's a king.
Uh-huh.
And
it's a battle.
Edomite.
It's a battle.
Danny called it a power struggle for kingship. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I don't need.
Well, there are many prophecies and sections of scripture where Edom and Judah are pictured as struggling. If Edom's up, Judah's down. Judah's up, Edom's down. It's always like this. And so kind of like for Judah to win, Edom has to submit to Judah.
Right.
So Herod is Edomian and the kings are from Edom in the east. So there's that also that contrast there.
So Matthew's whole portrayal of Jesus at his birth is very royal. Luke is the one who talks about him in a manger with, you know, animals and all this. Matthew doesn't mention any of that. Matthew mentions that these wise men come when he's a child and he's living in a house in chapter 2. So we'll go into that next couple weeks, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Yeah.